Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on tithing versus the income tax when we come back. You know, if you're earning $50,000 a year, and if you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 40% of what you create and produce. Government gets 60%. That's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? But if you think your share isn't enough, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes, just like you did this year, and you're going to net 25%, and the government will net 75%. That's right. You're going to work twice as hard, and then the government that got 60% this year is going to get 75% next year, 15% more if you work twice as hard and pay twice as much. That means if we're working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more. That's 8% more net take-home pay than you got this year. Now, that's guaranteed by Congress and the IRS. The government's going to make an extra 15%. You're going to make an extra 8%. Now, there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it. That's why I contend that you ought to call today and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's a 4-hour, entertaining, informational, educational. It answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we pay so much and receive so little. Now, to order that free general law CD package, why don't you just call direct 417-273-4967. Now, again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or you can go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. And remember, our tax and status school is also available on compact disc for adult homeschooling. You ought to call right now before you forget. That number is 417-273-4967. All right, I got a letter in here the other day from a young fella. I assume he's young. I'm kind of old, so everybody's young to me. He says, George, we have been reviewing the tithing scriptures, and all the scriptures that we see are related to agricultural products or herds or flocks and cattle. So where in the scripture does it say that a tithe is paid on all increase? That's question number one. Question number two, and then where in the scripture does it say that labor is an increase? That's question number two. And then question number three, if I exchange my labor for wood, isn't that a property exchange, and how did I increase from that? And he signs Phil. All right, Phil, let's see if we can take a look at this question of tithing. I get a lot of questions from various listeners, and oftentimes, and if a question like this one has pretty broad application as it deals with income tax, as well as this scriptural question of tithing, and I get a lot of those questions, while I answer each question one at a time and send your email back, I thought, well, see if I can answer about 50 people all at the same time and cover the subject of tithing, because tithing, in reality, is an income tax. Think about it. God said he wanted 10% of your increase. Government comes along, and when they started this income tax thing, they wanted to take about, I think it was 1%. It was back in 1914. Took about 1%. Pretty soon they were taking 5, 6, 8, 10%. Well, by the time the peak was reached with Franklin D. Roosevelt, they had raised the income tax rate to 91%. So that means you go out and make $100,000, you pay 90% of it, $91,000 to the government, and you get to keep $9,000. Now, President Reagan came in about 1980, and he reduced that. He ramrodded a program through Congress, and they reduced that tax rate from 91% to 42%. It stayed at 42% until George Bush ramrodded this tax reduction program through in his first term, and they lowered it down to, I think it's 35%, something on that order, you know, 32, 33, 35. Now, there's another tax that comes in here, and just in case you thought the government was doing you a big favor, there's another tax that comes in here. It's called the alternative minimum income tax. And when you factor in the alternative income tax, and then you factor in the deductions that you used to get that you can't get anymore, George Bush did not give you a tax reduction. He gave you a tax increase. Now, it's true that some people got a tax reduction, but it's even more poignant that most people got a tax increase. And the objective of government is to give you this tax increase so that you can't figure out that it's a tax increase. So we want it to look like that you're paying less money, when in reality you're paying more money through another channel, another vehicle, and especially through withholding taxes. Because if you don't see it, you don't miss it. If you really had an income tax and wanted to give yourself a real shock, then we would let you have all of the money for the entire year. Then work out your income tax, and then you've got to write a check, you know, for $5, $10, $15, $20, $30, $50, $100,000 to pay your taxes. Then you'd have a real concept of how much tax you're paying. We do this, of course, with time payments. If you had to walk in and buy a new car for $30,000 and physically reach in your wallet or your attaché case and pull out 300 $100 bills to pay for that car, you probably wouldn't buy it. But if we can give you a no money down, or we'll take your old car and trade, and give you $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000 back, you know, cash back, and get you to sign a contract for about $30,000 or $35,000 with all the cash backs and all of the bonus points and all the crap that goes with it, and then have you pay us $500, $600, $700 a month for the next 4 or 5 years, which really means that you're going to pay about $45,000 or $50,000 for this $30,000 car. People will buy into that program all day long, but when they actually write the check, I've noticed this with gold coin, you give a man 10 ounces of gold coin in his hand, and he doesn't want to let go of that. You give him a credit card, and he spend that money in short order. So there's something about the physical money itself, the physical property, that sticks to your skin, sticks to the palm of your hand. Well, there's 5 motivators in human nature. It's vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And government is a master salesman, and government with its master salesmen are out there selling you a product, selling you a philosophy, selling you a program. And, of course, if you buy it, it makes money for the guy that's selling it. That's why car salesmen sell cars. That's why carpet salesmen sell carpet, and that's why politicians sell taxes. Nobody wants to buy taxes, but everybody wants the services. And so they sell you the services. They sell you Social Security, Medicare, free drug care, free drug and prescription stuff. Hey, boys and girls, free public education? Let me give you an illustration. If you take free public education, the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto, free public education sounds great. We all want free public education, and that's because it's free. Now, we finance public education through taxes, primarily property taxes. All right? So, in the Bible, you have no property tax, zero, zilch. I mean, you can live on your farm, live in your house, you pay no tax. You pay a tithe, 10%, but you pay no property tax, no social security tax, no income tax. But there's a funding program that funds government called the tithing system, with which the income tax is a counterfeit. Now, there's no public education in the Bible. Everybody educates his child at home in his own family at his own expense. And if you don't educate your child, that's your business. If you want your kid to grow up to be dumb, terrific. We don't care. It's none of our business. We would say, well, that's probably a shame, but then, you know, that's neither here nor there. On the other hand, I'm going to educate my child to be real smart, and my child is going to be head and shoulders above your child, and your child is always going to be working for my child. People took a look at that, and they said, well, that isn't fair. We don't like that program. What we want is free public education. Now, here's the way we finance that. In America today, it costs about $7,000 to educate a child in public school. Now, that's the national average. $7,000 a year. You can send that same kid to any parochial school in the country for less money. And I think most everybody knows that if you sent your child to a parochial school, he would get a better education, he would turn out to be smarter, he would know more. He'd have a better education if he went to a Catholic school or a Baptist school or a military school or any kind of parochial school, which costs on average $2,300 a year. And it always made me wonder, well, how is it that the Catholics can run a school and for $2,300 a year they can educate a kid and the kid's smarter than the one from the public school, which costs $7,000? I don't know. Just mull it over in your mind. We do it. It's the way the game is played here in America, so I just thought I'd share it with you. Now get this. If you educate your child at home, which 2 million children a year, more likely about 3 now, 3 million children a year, being educated at home by their parents, who don't want to pay $2,300 on average to send their kid to a parochial school. You know what it costs? $542. $542. Now, why is it that you can educate a kid for $500 at home, $2,500 in parochial school, or $7,000 in public school? It all has to do with the sleight of hand. It all has to do with a deception. Now, people love government, and they love income tax. In fact, people love income tax far more than they love or like tithing, as evidenced by the fact that far more people pay income tax than tithe. I mean, you know, you got to go with the majority, and the majority prefer the income tax. Although, I'm not quite sure why, because I discovered that tithing pays better. See, I educate my child at home in public, at home in homeschool rather than public school, because my child will score at the on average at the 86th percentile. In parochial school, they will score at about the 82nd percentile, just slightly less. Not much, but just slightly. For practical purposes, parochial school is as good as homeschool, you know, for practical purposes. But get this, the national average in public school is that children score at the 50th percentile nationwide. Now think about that. 50th percentile in public school, 86th percentile at home. And if your child is being educated in an inner city public school like Detroit, Philadelphia, Chicago, Los Angeles, they're scoring on average at the 28th percentile. 28. Now, why is it that it costs $7,000 to educate a kid to the 28th percentile? And $500 to educate a kid to the 86th percentile. Just thought I'd share that with you. Well, it has to do with government. It has to do with sales and salesmanship, which we'll get into here. Now, Phil has asked, why is it that this tithing thing over here, when I go to tithe, why is it that all I can find in the Bible is references made to farming and agriculture and cattle raising and things like that? Okay? Well, that's because the Bible isn't a religious book, it's a law book. And because it's a law book, we have to use a process called code pleading. And it's a legal term, code pleading. And the first thing we do is we take a look in Strong's Concordance at the word tithe, singular, tithes, plural, tithing, and maybe past tense, tithed, T-I-T-H-E-D. And we take a look and we find that tithe appears in the Bible 14 times. Tithes, plural, appears in the Bible 23 times. And tithing appears 2 times in the Bible. So we have 4 and 3 is 7, 2 is 9, 1, 2, 3, 39 times. 4 and 3 is 7, 2 is 9, 1, 2, 3, 39 times that we find the word tithe in the Bible. So that means that there's 39 possible instructions that we could be receiving on this thing of tithing. Now, the reason that I say that in regards to this letter is that Phil says that he and his buddy here, they could only find herds, flocks, and cattle. And then they ask me, well, can you tell us about all increase or about labor as an increase or exchanging wood for labor? So let me tell you the answer to the riddle. Tithing doesn't apply just to agriculture. It applies to everything that you do, just like the income tax. The income tax is not a burden that is placed upon agriculture and only farmers pay the income tax, and butchers and bakers and candlestick makers and bookmakers don't pay. They don't pay their fair share. They don't pay anything to support government. Tithing works the same way. Tithing, in reality, is the civil service to the Levitical priesthood. Those are the people that deliver the mail, keep the peace, put out the fires, and do those things that governmental workers do. They were the judges of ancient Israel. It was a system of government set up by God, and it had to be financed, just like any government service has to be financed. I mean, if you want Social Security, somebody has to collect the money, somebody has to process it, somebody has to write up the checks, you know, people have to keep records and books, and, you know, the people of America said, we want Social Security. Okay, well, then you got to pay a tax to support it. And you want free public education. Okay, well, then you got to have a property tax to support it. I mean, you know, we don't have to be rocket scientists to figure this out. Now, in the biblical scheme of things, if we have a very limited government, then we don't need very much tax. If you have a very broad, expansive government, then you have to have a lot of tax. The more government that you want, boys and girls, the more tax you have to pay to support it. Over in France, the average tax rate is 60%. So a man goes out and he earns $100,000 a year. He pays $60,000 to the government, and he gets to keep and spend $40,000. And here in the United States, I don't know what the exact averages are here in this country, but in round numbers, it's around 50%. It's not as high as it is in Europe, but it's getting up there. In fact, the more money you make, unless you're crafty, now I'll concede this, that people that make $100,000 a year don't pay $75,000 a year in taxes. People that make $100,000 a year have CPAs, and they have apartment houses and tax depreciation write-off and oil wells and other things over here that they invest in to mitigate that extreme or excessive tax. But I'm pointing out that the tax rate in this country, based upon the 14 taxes that we all pay, 14, we all pay these taxes to support our government. And these taxes that go to support the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto to give us free public education is the most expensive education you can buy. It's called free, but it costs $7,000. Homeschool isn't free, but it only costs $500. Now, which would you rather do? Work and produce $7,000 and give it to the government to educate your kid in public school, or to work and produce $7,000, take $500 of it and educate your kid at home, and keep the other $6,500 for yourself to spend on something that you want? Now, Americans, by and large, I mean far and away, I mean we Americans absolutely prefer working, producing $7,000 and giving it to the government than we do to educating a child at home. All right, so that's a choice that we have to make. We made it, and we live with it. Now, fortunately, under our Constitution, little Georgie Gordon has a choice. And so here's what I did. I made my choice, and my choice is this. I'm going to work and make the $7,000, and I'm going to do it in gold coin. I'm going to pay a tithe on that $7,000. Then I'm going to educate my kid at home, and I'm going to keep the other $6,500 and blow it on wild women, cigarettes, whiskey, song, and Flo's Whorehouse. Now, you can do what you want with your money, and then I'll do what I want with my money, but that's my choice. Now, that's what I did, and I think tithing, for that very reason, is a better program. It's a program that is predicated upon limited government. Now, fortunately for us here in the United States, we have a choice. We can participate in the all-expansive federal government, or we can participate in the limited government that our Constitution mandates. It's a choice that we Americans have. I'm not sure you Canadians have that choice, or Australians, or New Zealanders, or Danes, and Belgians, and Norwegians. I don't know. I can't speak for you and your country. Even though those are Israelite countries, I suspect that you probably have that choice and you didn't know that. But here in America, most Americans don't know that we've got that choice, and so they support this big government. They complain about it. They complain about the taxes. They complain about the government. But when the rubber meets the road, Americans, when they have a choice, like we did in 1992 and 1996, between a flat tax and a heavy progressive income tax, we Americans made our choice. And we voted for Bill Clinton. And we voted for Bill Clinton twice. And we could have voted for Bob Dole, or we could have voted for Steve Forbes. And Forbes proposed that we change this income tax system to a flat tax. And that's what tithing is. Tithing is a flat tax. Everybody in the society pays 10%, period. If you make $1 million, you pay $100,000 of it. That's your tax. That's your tithe. If you make $10,000, then you pay $1,000. If you make $5,000, you pay $500. If you make $1,000, you pay $100. Everybody pays the tithe. Everybody shares in the exact same burden. Now, I know that that's as popular as AIDS at an office Christmas party, because Americans prefer to tax wealthy people more. Somehow, Americans believe that Donald Trump, who makes millions and millions of dollars a year, should pay more money in taxes than Joe Sixpack, who's driving a truck for Yellow Freight. Now, boys and girls, I want to tell you that I think Joe Sixpack, who's paying his income tax, pays more tax than Donald Trump. In dollars, I would believe that. And I can tell you that corporations like General Motors, IBM, Ford, pay no tax at all. Zero. Zilch. None. Not. Nada. Zero. God required that everybody pay a 10% tax. Now, Phil here is asking the question, well, can you show me where that applies to truck drivers, oil rig or roughnecks, and laborers, and carpenters, plumbers, and electricians, and candlestick makers, and butchers, and bakers, and everybody else? And the answer is, yeah, I can show you that, and I'm going to. But I thought while we were at it, we might as well explore the income tax, because tithing is the basis of this counterfeit that we call the income tax here in the United States. And government has counterfeited it, and they have changed it. They have utilized a lot of principles from it. And it's certainly legal and lawful, this income tax. There's nothing that's unconstitutional about it. And you can tithe or you can pay the income tax. You're going to do one or the other, Phil. It doesn't make any difference to me. Doesn't make any difference to God himself. That there's a law out there that requires that you pay a tithe, and you can do that voluntarily, or you can pay the income tax by distraint. And if you don't pay the income tax, they'll lock you up. But there's no penalty for not paying the tithe. Did you know that? For instance, you can look in the Ten Commandments, and not one of the Ten Commandments is aimed at tithing. Isn't that just special? Now, in the federal Constitution, you've got a 16th Amendment over here. You've got a Constitution that allows Congress to set up a taxing program. You have a taxing program set up in your Constitution with penalties, and if you don't pay that tax, they get real nasty with you, want to lock you up in jail and fine you and take your property. God never prescribed that, not once. Now, there is a penalty for not paying the income tax, but it's not a prescribed penalty, such as, but not limited to, listen to this. You got a law in here, and it says, thou shalt not commit adultery. You go out and commit adultery, there's a specific prescribed penalty called death. It's a capital felony. So God prescribed the people that practice that kind of sexual deviancy should be stoned to death. All right? So there's cause and effect. You got a crime and punishment. Now take a look at tithing. You got tithing, and there's a law, there's a prescription, there's a requirement, but there's no corresponding statute that says that if we catch you not tithing, if you don't pay your tithe, if you defraud God in some way out of the tithe, then you're going to get the death penalty, or you're going to get 5 years in prison, or you're going to have a fine of $10,000. There's no such prescription. Now, isn't that just special? It's an anomaly. So you can sit there and say, well, tithing then is not a law, it's a suggestion. And you'd be right. You'd be right. Now, there is a penalty, though. And the penalty is prescribed, and we'll start with the penalty phase, and then we'll work back from the penalty phase. It's in Malachi 3, verse 7. Malachi 3, verse 7. The reason for tithing has very little to do with crime and punishment. It has to do with carrot and stick. Carrot and stick. And do you want these benefits? My old daddy used to do that to me. He'd say, now, here's the requirements here. You've got to make your bed, take out the garbage, mow the grass, and a couple other little chores around the house. And then if you do that, I'm going to give you your allowance, which was $2 a week. And then I'm going to give you your movie money. You get 50 cents on Friday. See, my dad was an insurance salesman, so he'd be out working Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Friday afternoon, about 3, 4, 5 o'clock, he'd come home. The end of the week. And he would give me my movie money, my allowance. And then if I did my work right, he'd say, well, now I'm going to take you hunting tomorrow. See, on Saturday, we'd go hunting. And we'd go out and shoot squirrels, or we'd go shoot rabbits, or we'd go out and target shoot, or we'd go deer hunting, or we'd go do something, you know, but we'd go hunting or something. Now, if I didn't do my work, then he'd come home on Friday, he'd grab me, throw me up against the wall, slap the hell out of me. And then he wouldn't give me my movie money, he wouldn't give me my allowance, he wouldn't take me hunting, and then I could spend Saturday doing my work. And so, you know, it was a choice that kids make. You know, you got Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to do your chores and your work. And if you do that, you get these rewards and these benefits. And if you don't, then I'm going to punish you, and then I'm not going to give you your benefits. And then you can go do that work anyway. So I woke up one day and I said, geez, you know, just 12-year-old pimply-faced punk-ass kid, you know, smart enough to figure out that I would trade the movie money, the allowance, and the hunting if I didn't have to do the work. But the worst part of it is, I lose all the benefits, and then I have to do the work on Saturday, when we could be out shooting, hunting, and having a good time. So I didn't get away with anything, and so after a couple of rounds of doing that, I woke up one day and I just said, you know, it's cheaper, faster, easier, and better for me to just sit down, shut up, do what I'm told, do my work, then I can go hunting, get my movie money, get my allowance, and then it doesn't hurt as bad. So I was raised in the era before child abuse, and so kids that didn't mind, didn't do what they were told, that they suffered pain, suffering, anguish, and gnashing of teeth. Hang on. Well, I give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give, however, do not necessarily mean that these authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate and recommend the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review, at least in its entirety. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call direct, area code 417-273-4967. All right, this week we're talking about tithing. Well, at least for a day or two. Got a letter here from Phil. It's not the only letter. I get quite a few letters about tithes and tithing, and so I thought, well, let's take an opportunity here while it's there. We'll make lemonade out of this lemon, as they say. Not that this is necessarily a lemon, Phil. But Phil wants to know, he said, we've been reviewing the tithing scriptures. All right, now I showed you at the beginning of the program, there are 39 tithing scriptures. Well, there's 39 scriptures that mention the word tithe, tithes, or tithing. And he says, all of the scriptures that we see are related to agricultural products or herbs, herds, flocks, and cattle. And he wants to know, where in the scripture does it say that the tithe is paid on all increase? And where in the scripture does it say that labor is an increase? And if I exchange my labor for wood, isn't that a property exchange? And how did I increase from that? Okay, so there's three questions. three questions that Phil had. We're going to answer those three questions. But before we get to those three questions, let's start from the back end. And let's find out, what are the benefits that you receive if you tithe? In other words, I got a law over here that requires that I tithe. What am I going to get out of it? At least when I pay my property tax, I get free public education. It may be expensive, but I get it. And what do I get from my income tax? Well, I get Polaris submarines marauding around in the ocean protecting me from Al-Qaeda and the Russians and the Chinese. You might sit there and say, yeah, but that's a phony threat. Well, maybe it is, but, you know, at least I get the protection. When I pay my gasoline tax, I get paved highway to drive my car on. Maybe it's an excessive amount of tax. Maybe I'm paying twice as much tax as needs to be paid for the same amount of goods and services and flat paved highway, but, hell, I'm getting something for the money. What am I going to get out of tithing? Now, the people that tithe, which aren't very many, but most people that tithe are religious people, and they tithe to their churches, which is pretty bizarre. Bizarre. And that's because churches don't receive tithes, at least not from the Bible, not from the God of Abraham. I don't deny that religious people tithe and they tithe to their churches, but the tithing system set up in the Bible by Moses at the mouth of God Almighty himself is a system of financing government, not church. I'll show you that as we progress along. But I thought I'd tell you the answer, and then we'll work backwards and we'll come up to the question. So the religious people are out here paying the preachers the tithe that belongs to the Levites that you should be paying instead of the income tax, because number one, it's a hell of a lot less money, and number two, it pays you better. You can pay your income tax until hell freezes over and you get nothing for it. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. Zippo. Nothing. Pay your tithe and you get something for it. Tangible benefits. Meat and potatoes on your table. Gasoline in your gas tank. An automobile to drive. So that's why I said I think tithing is a better program than income tax, but Americans have chosen the income tax over tithing. And the people that do tithe, tithe to their churches. They don't tithe to the Levites, which is where the tithe is supposed to go. And so you take the Mormons, they got the worst of both worlds. They're tithing to their church and paying income tax to the government. Now you talk about a kettle of fish, you talk about a can of worms. Now, again, you know, people make their choices in life, and if you want to go out and work and make your money and then give it to a church, that's your choice in life. Hell, don't think that I'm running it down. It's a choice that you make, and you do it. But it's not something that you got out of the Bible. And that's what Phil is asking me. He said, gee, we've been checking out these tithing scriptures. Now, if you want to get the straight skinny on tithing to your church, I mean, hell, go to the local Mormon church. I mean, they can probably tell you all about tithing to church. But they're not going to find it in the Bible because it ain't there. Now, I'm not a preacher. I'm just a crummy plumber, but I just wanted to tell you that I read it and checked it out. And I'm pretty crafty and pretty catty, and I said, we're going to code plead this out. So Malachi 3, verse 7. I mentioned that scripture a little earlier. If you don't have a Bible, you ought to run and get one. Follow me along here. Or follow along with me, I guess I should say. Malachi 3, verses 7 through 12, it says, even from the days of your fathers, you're gone away from my ordinances. All right, Phil? Here's God. He's sending you a message here. He says, even from the days of your fathers, 84 generations back at Mount Sinai, from that day to this, you have gone away from my ordinances. You're not following my laws. It's not just tithing. It's a whole bunch of other things. And I've got a bitch with you. and you've not kept them. You haven't practiced my law. Now, I don't think you'd argue much with that, would you, Phil? I mean, you're not diligently working real hard, searching the scriptures daily to find out what the laws of God are so that you can practice them. Most people aren't. Most people are a hell of a lot more concerned about buckling their seat belts than they are about tithing or obeying God and keeping His commandments. People are real concerned about income tax and whether or not they can take this deduction or that deduction. I don't see people very, very serious about looking in the Bible. So when you write a letter and you say, well, God, I looked through the scriptures over here and here's what I'm finding, I say, well, my hat's off to you, Phil. At least you started looking through the Bible to find out, gee, does this law even apply to me? That puts you about 5 miles ahead of the average Joe Sixpack out there. Now, here's God. He says, now return to me, and I will return to you, saith the Lord of hosts. But, Phil, you said, wherein shall we return? That's why you wrote me this letter. Evidently, you didn't have God's address, didn't have his email, didn't have his fax number, and you couldn't get in contact with him directly, so you sent a letter to me. Evidently, you must have think that I've got his fax number or that I've got his email address. So in Malachi 3 verse 8, here's the very next verse, he says, will a man rob God? Now there's a statute that says, thou shalt not steal. Then we've got a statute over here that says, you're going to tithe because that's the law and I'm going to give you that law. And if you don't tithe, if you don't follow that law, then you're robbing me. And so he asks a rhetorical question. He says, will a man rob God? Would you stick a gun in God's face and tell him, give me your wallet? That would take a lot of gall, wouldn't it? Would you do that? I mean, if God walked up to you and said, let me introduce myself, I'm God. And you say, well, let me introduce myself. I'm Joe Sixpack. You whip out a .45, stick it in his face. Give me your wallet, God. I'm going to rob you. You're sitting there saying, well, that's crazy. That's stupid. That's kind of dumb. I don't think I could get away with that. Yeah, that's probably true. You probably couldn't get away with that. So if you couldn't get away with it, then why would you attempt it? Why would you think about it? What would motivate you? I mean, that's like marching up down in front of the IRS building with a sign that says the IRS sucks and the income tax is a criminal enterprise. You know, on April the 15th, you know, people do that. March up and down in front of the federal building with signs and placards, you know. And, you really sure you want to do that? You really want to give them the finger, do you? He goes on to say, but you say, wherein have we robbed you? See, Phil, you're saying, yeah, God, but wherein have we robbed you? And the answer is, he says, in tithes and offerings. So I want to point this out to you, that not only are there tithes, T-I-T-H-E-S, tithes, Phil, that's plural. Could there be two tithes, three tithes, four, five, six tithes? There can't be more than 10 tithes, because a tithe is a tenth. So we couldn't have more than 10 tithes, but we've got more than one, because he said right here, he says, wherein have we robbed you? And he says, in tithes and offerings, Phil, that's where you've robbed me. I want to point out that there's offerings on top of this tithe. Tithes, plural, two at least, you got offerings. Let me write that down. So I don't know. maybe we better be thinking about tithes, plural, two tithes plus some offerings here. Verse 9, he says, you're cursed with a curse, Phil, because you've robbed me. And not just you, Phil, even this whole nation's robbed me. The whole nation. All of the Canadians have robbed me. All of the Australians have robbed me. All of the New Zealanders, all of the Americans, all of the Britons and the French. The only people that haven't robbed him are the Chinese and the Japs. He never ordered them to pay a tithe, just us Israelites. And we got that straight skinny right from Moses, live and direct. right off the mountain. Said, hey, sucker, wake up. Pay attention here. I got this tithing law. And so he says to us, our whole nation has robbed him. Now, verse 10, he says, now you bring all of the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in my house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Eternal of Hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. Ah, that's what I wanted to hear. I always liked it when my dad poured me out a blessing that was so great that I couldn't receive it. My pockets weren't deep enough, wouldn't hold all of the money. Unfortunately, my pockets were plenty deep, and when my dad gave me my 50-cent piece to go to the movies, I could stick that 4-bit piece in my pocket and lose it down there with all of my marbles and keychains and pocket knives and all the valuable rocks and stuff that I had in my pocket. So when I reached in my pocket and I'd pull out all this stuff, kids always have valuable stuff in their pockets. All you mothers know that. Kids, especially boys, have all this valuable stuff in their pockets. I never had pockets that were so deep that my dad didn't have room enough to fill them up. Now, here's the creator of the universe. He says, now, let's pay attention to this again, Phil. He says, you bring me your tithes into the storehouse that there may be meat in my house. Now, why don't you prove me, Phil? Why don't you test me out? Why don't you try this and see, says the Eternal. This isn't George Gordon. I'm just a messenger here. He says, this is the Eternal of Hosts. He says, if I, the God of heaven, the God of Abraham, I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, and there shall not be room enough to receive it. Phil, your pockets will not be deep enough. Your place will not be big enough to handle all of the stuff. That's the problem I've got here. You students, you know, that have been here, have you noticed all the stuff that I've got here? I don't have enough barns and enough buildings to put all this stuff into. In fact, another truckload came in last Friday night, and I had to unload it in the driveway. There is not enough room in the barn to put it, so it's out in the rain. That's why I like this program, Phil, because it pays so well. And then I've lived on both sides of poverty. See, I've lived on the downhill side. That's where I had plenty of it, on the uphill side where I've got less of it. And between poverty and wealth, there's this great big chasm. Great big chasm. And I prefer to be on the uphill side. Now he said in verse 11, I'll rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, and neither shall your vine caster fruit before the time in the field, says the Eternal of Hosts. And all nations shall call you blessed, for you shall be a delightsome land, says the Lord of Hosts. Says all nations will call you blessed. You ever notice that the United States of America was called the richest, most powerful nation in the world? Used to be. We're not anymore. See, we used to be the world's number one creditor nation. Now we're the world's number one debtor nation. Debtor. Balance of payments is going to top $800 billion for 2005. And your national debt has already topped $8 trillion. You've got unfunded government debt totaling $49 trillion. That's called unfunded. The average family of four in America has a $70,000 consumer debt. And then we've got derivatives. God knows what the derivative bill is going to be. It's unregulated, so nobody's got a firm handle on the number, but it's in excess of $200 trillion. And Phil, you get to be one of the joint and several underwriters of the derivatives bill. $200 trillion. Isn't that just real special? Hell, you didn't even know that, did you? Kind of like the savings and loan outfit. Remember the savings and loans? And how the American taxpayers were the creditors of last resort, and how they had to pay it off and bail them out? Isn't that just special? Wait until you get a hold of Citicorp and J.P. Morgan and the rest of these big banks, Bank of America, when they go belly up. Ah, hell, that's a story for another day and another dollar. All right, did you get that? Now, here's the bottom line of the story. No penalty for not tithing, Phil. No movie money, no allowance, and no hunting if you don't tithe. Choice is yours. Now, of course, we haven't discussed who we ought to be tithing to. I already told you ought not to be tithing to churches. You got a law here that requires you to tithe. The tithe goes to the Levites, and when was the last time you saw a Levite? Hell, this problem gets bigger and more worser as we look into it. You got a law here that says, hey, you tithe, and I'll give you all these neat blessings. If you don't tithe, I'm going to take your blessings away from you. You got to tithe to these Levites, but there ain't a Levite in town. How are you going to solve that problem? Hell, that's worse than the three problems that you gave me. So we've got to solve that one, too. Where are you going to pay this tithe? And even if you wanted to pay the tithe, where are you going to pay it? So the religious guy comes in and says, well, since ain't no Levites around, you should pay it to me. I'm Billy Graham. Hey, you should pay it to me. I'm Oral Roberts, and God will take me if you don't pay me. Or, hey, I'm Jerry Falwell, or I'm this or that or something else, and you ought to pay me because I'm teaching about Jesus and Him crucified. So you ought to pay me the tithe. Hell, why don't you just send it to little Georgie Gordon? I'll take your tithe. I'm just kind of kidding you a little bit. Don't send your tithes here. Because for me to take a tithe from you would be a theft. A theft on my part. I'm not a Levite. And only Levites can accept tithes. Only Levites. Well, there's a couple of exceptions to that. We'll take a look at who the exceptions to that tithing to Levites is. But it's a pretty narrow constraint. All right, so now we take a look and we found out that there is a benefit if you tithe. There's no penalty if you don't. God is not going to kill you, strike you dead. He's not going to put you in prison. He's not going to fine you. But He's not going to give you your movie money, Phil. He's not going to give you these benefits that He said that He'd pour out on you. You will find the bottoms of your pockets. Now, when did tithing get started? Did it start with Moses out at Mount Sinai? Well, the answer to that's no. No, it didn't. In Genesis 14, verse 20, we find the word tithe. In fact, it's tithes, plural. And blessed be the Most High God, which has delivered your enemies into thy hand, and He gave him tithes of all. This is Genesis 14, verse 20. This is a guy by the name of Abraham. This is the first guy in our genealogy. Well, he's the first guy that we take account of. Obviously, Adam and Eve were the first guys. But when you get over here to Abraham, he's the first guy that God starts working with here on this side of the flood. Genesis 14, verse 20. And there's a guy here by the name of Melchizedek. And he's kind of a strange guy. Starts in verse 17, it says, and the king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return from the slaughter of Chedorlaomer, whatever his name is, and of the kings that were with him at the valley of Sheba, which is the king's dale, and Melchizedek, the king, here's Melchizedek, the king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. Melchizedek, priest of the Most High God. Huh. Kind of sounds like Jesus, doesn't it? Well, that's who it was. And this guy blessed Abraham, and he said, blessed be Abraham of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be the Most High God, which has delivered your enemies into your hand, and he gave him tithes of all. And the king of Sodom said unto Abram, you give me the persons, and you take the goods to yourself. And Abraham said to the king of Sodom, I have lift up my hand unto the Eternal, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take from a thread even to a shoe latchet, and that I will not take anything that is thine, lest you should say I have made Abraham rich, save only that which the young men have eaten, and that portion of the men which went with me, Aner, Eshcol, and Mimre, let them take their portion. Very important principle here of limited government. what happened here in the story was that Abraham went to war. He had about I think it was 310 servants. 310 men. And I don't know, he got into a bitch with the king of Sodom or Gomorrah, one or the other. Or maybe it was the king of Sodom he was in league with. And the king of Sodom said to Abraham, "Give me the persons and you take the goods to yourself." Abraham was in a league with the king over in Sodom. And the two of them went out and they took care of this problem they had. Somebody came in there and raided Abraham's cattle or something. He got a little bummed out about it, and so he went out there and he cleaned house. Cleaned their clocks, what he did. And he took some spoil from them. And the king of Sodom, who was in on this program, he said, "Hey, you give me the slaves, and you take the goods." And Abraham said to this king of Sodom, he said, "No, I'm not going to take any of this." Now, Americans have it just the other way around. See, if the government comes along and says, "Hey, we want to give you these benefits," Americans want to line up to take the benefits. Government offers benefits, they want to line up. Abraham said, no, I don't think I want to do that. And that's because I don't want you to say you've made Abraham rich. Americans, they want to become rich at the hand of some other taxpayer. This is called income redistribution. So, crafty government politicians come along and they take from the working class, that's the Joe Sixpacks driving the truck for Yellow Freight. They call that an income tax, and then they give it to some other guy, welfare mom up in Harlem, and they make her dependent upon the government. And they create these various and sundry programs, Social Security, unemployment insurance, workman's compensation, which now ties you into the income tax. Well, now you got to pay this income tax in order to fulfill these needs. You've got to pay if you want to play. Got to pay to play. That's the way it is down at the Blue Room. You walk into the card room and you got to pay to play. You want to buy yourself a seat at the table? Cost $5. And then every 15 minutes, the croupier, the houseman, comes around and he takes one chip, $1, every 15 minutes, $4 an hour, to sit there at the poker table and play. So if you want to play in this game, you want to be a taxpayer, you want to get the benefits, you've got to pay to play. Here's the first principle of limited government that you find in the Bible. It's in Genesis 14. Abraham said to the king of Sodom, "I'm not taking anything from you, sucker. Nothing." That's the first thing we got to learn here, Phil. And if you want limited government and you want more for yourself, you got to tell the government, take those goodies and stuff them. Or as they say in that song, you take this stuff and shove it. All right, we're out of time. We'll be back here tomorrow night talking about tithes and tithing next time here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. So let me remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Law Hour and Law School, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.